Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So I remember back in 1996, as part of my union, we were fighting against the Ridge administration's major changes to the workers' compensation laws in Pennsylvania that would have, in my view, broken the grand compromise of I won't sue you if you don't screw me when a worker gets injured. And the major changes happened, and it appears now the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has made a decision that, well, could change some of that, which is why, and this is kind of technical stuff, which is why I've asked our expert friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson, to come talk with us. Irwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be here with you, Rick, and I'm not sure that I'm an expert, but I'm as good as you get today.
Yeah, well, you understand this a lot better than I do, because I remember back in 96 fighting against the Ridge changes, and while didn't know all of the intricacies at the time, I knew that it was a departure from what had been the past practice.
Oh, very much so. And there were very broadly swath changes that were adopted by the General Assembly in 1996, most of which still stand, and they really, as a broad swath, compromised workers' compensation claimants, people who get hurt trying to earn a living and support their families, right to access the workers' compensation benefits to which they had been entitled and their eligibility for which had been consistent going all the way back to 1915. There were several changes in 96. One was this fantasy right to impose upon workers' compensation claimants fictional income attributed to their earning capacity from phantom jobs without there having to be any demonstration that there was an actual job available to that person at that time. And that change in the law created two devastating impacts. One was that people's benefit amount was reduced by the amount of the wages that were attributed to these phantom jobs because of the fictional income associated with them.
Right, and by phantom jobs, you mean jobs that people didn't actually have, didn't actually get, but someone said were out there somewhere for them if they were just able to find them.
Exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself. And then they made an attribution of fictional income associated with that phantom job and deducted that from the person's weekly benefits. So that was bang number one. But bang number two was that also converted people from a total disability status to a partial disability status. And that's very significant because going all the way back to the beginning of workers' compensation in Pennsylvania, when one is on total disability, the benefits and medical care last for as long as one is totally disabled. But when one is deemed to be partially disabled, that is capable of engaging in some residual earning capacity, the benefit eligibility terminates after 500 weeks, about 9.5 years, even though everybody acknowledges as a matter of law that the disability remains. And that gets us really to the key of the decision of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court last week, which was probably the most significant decision in the workers' comp arena that I can recall in the last 35 or 40 years. After 21 years, from 1996, when this so-called Ridge, and I'm among those people that don't call it reform. I call it Ripper because that's what it was. It reformed nothing except reformed us out of our right to access workers' compensation when we get hurt trying to earn a living. But one of the essential linchpins of those 1996 amendments was another fantasy in fiction, and that was that after someone had been on and eligible for workers' compensation, in other words, after either an acknowledgement by the employer and its insurance company or a judicial determination that someone was eligible because of a work-related accident, injury, or disease for both weekly annuity benefits, wage replacement benefits, and medical care. After that person in that situation was acknowledged to be totally disabled for 104 weeks, basically 2 years, the employer or its insurer could demand what is known as an IRE, an individual residual function capacity evaluation, by a doctor that's not the claimant's, not the victim's treating doctor, but some so-called independent doctor. And that's bad enough, but then they said that the IRE had to be based upon something that was not adopted by the legislature, not created regulatorily by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania or the Department of Labor and Industry or the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board or the Pennsylvania Workmen's Compensation Bureau, but by the American Medical Association. It's a document that's known as the AMA Residual Functional Capacity Guidelines. And those guidelines, which the AMA modifies from time to time on its own and changes, and because of those changes gets to sell new copies of their book with the AMA guidelines, was engrafted into Pennsylvania law as the standard. Well, the Pennsylvania Constitution, as we had argued back in 1996, doesn't permit the General Assembly to delegate its role to some other entity that's not the government.
Right.
It's known as an impermissible delegation of legislative authority. So the 1996 amendments that engrafted the AMA, American Medical Association, guidelines onto the system essentially stand for the proposition that if after 104 weeks, anytime after 104 weeks, the claimant, in other words, the claimant has the burden, the claimant cannot demonstrate that at least 50% of his or her total bodily impairment was exclusively related to the accident, injury, or disease at work that caused them to be on comp, then they could be immediately converted from a total disability to a partial disability, and instead of getting benefits for and being eligible for benefits for as long as they remain disabled, they would be cut off from benefit eligibility after that same 500 weeks. Last week, the Supreme Court said that this action of delegating this and designating the AMA guidelines as the measure of proof was an unlawful and unconstitutional and therefore impermissible delegation of legislative authority to an outside entity, and declared this section of the workers' compensation law from 21 years ago to be an unconstitutional act.
Wow.
And struck it from the law.
That's enormous. But here's the question I have then. What about all of those people who have been injured and all of those people who lived under this law? And I can think of a bunch of people I know. You know, one guy broke his back. Another guy basically almost ripped his foot off in a fall. They ended up settling claims, like 300 weeks for pennies. And, they're basically destitute now. Because, they got injured on the job, they can't work, but the law had basically left them in no man's land. What happens to those people?
Well, that is the next question. The Supreme Court, as it always must, decided the case that was before it. So the case that was before it was whether or not that particular claim, the case is called PROTZ, P-R-O-T-Z, versus the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board, whether Ms. PROTZ was eligible for benefits when her situation arose within that 500-week period. the question gets to be now, and we're going to need to probe and explore this in a judicial context, what the retroactive as well as prospective impact of this is. And does it only apply to cases that remain within that 500-week period? Does it apply to all cases that were affected by this? Does it apply only prospectively? We don't know. Yesterday, and this is really very much breaking news, a petition for allowance of appeal was filed with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court in a case called Gillespie versus Workers' Compensation Appeals Board. The Gillespie case was working its way through the system, and it was a case in which the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board denied the claim because Mr. Gillespie didn't file his appeal within 60 days, another threshold in the law, even though by the time his case got to the Commonwealth Court, Protz had been decided by the Commonwealth Court as being unconstitutional, in effect. So Gillespie yesterday filed a petition for allowance of appeal. This is discretionary with the Supreme Court, to ask the court to make this next determination as to the scope and contours of its decision last week in the Protz case. And we'll see whether the court takes that case, and if they do, what it's going to be, and that is what's going to develop over the next couple of months. I mean, the court could refuse to hear it, they could accept it, or they could determine that based upon their decision in Protz last week, they need to remand this back to the Commonwealth Court for further findings based upon its decision in Protz, and even maybe suggest that the Commonwealth Court has to remand it back to the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board for such activity, and that could be troublesome because the appeals board has demonstrated over the past couple of years a real reluctance to deal with what Protz stands for, and people need to understand and be clear that in the workers' compensation context, we're not talking about appeals of bad decisions. We're talking about terminations of benefits and reinstatement of benefits. So essentially, if in every other area outside of these IRE kinds of things, where we have somebody who was hurt and converted to a partial because of maybe one of these phantom jobs or this fictional income, or because they actually can do some light-duty work and they therefore become a partial instead of a total in that 500-week jackpot, they always have the right to file what's known as a petition to reinstate benefits, and that can be timely as long as it's within that 500-week period. So we need to sort all of this out, and there's going to be this Gillespie case and maybe others. I have had the opportunity in the Gillespie matter to review the documents that were being filed with the court as they were filed just yesterday, and it strikes me that there's a fair amount of merit to the claim that Mr. Gillespie is putting forth regarding his rights now that Protz has been decided.
Well, let me ask you this then, because there are thousands, if not tens of thousands, of people out there who, you know, they lived under the 96 changes. Decisions were made, you know, contrary things were changed. People lost jobs. People lost income. What do those folks do? I mean, you know, it sounds to me like there may be recourse into the future, possibly. What should those people be doing right now?
Well, a lot of locals, local unions and state organizations like the Pennsylvania FLCIO, the Pennsylvania Building Trades, are encouraging their affiliated unions and their members to report in to their unions where they are in these situations so we can begin a process of evaluating these cases and make some determinations as to what remaining rights exist for people who were just terminated after basically 12 years of benefits, those first 104 weeks that I described, and then 500 weeks thereafter. So cases that are 10 years old or so, given that this passed in 1996. So and then other cases where people, when faced with this, made a further settlement of their case so that they wouldn't be harassed by insurance companies and took pennies on the already reduced dollars that workers' comp provides. And then there is going to be another subset of cases where people lost their medical treatment subsequent to the expiration of this 500-week period or a premature settlement like I just described. So there's a whole lot of that, and we need people to get to their unions and get to their state federations and regional councils and district councils in the unionized settings. And in the non-union settings, I would urge them to contact people like you to get it to people like me and see what's going on. And we can start to evaluate cases on an individual basis and make some determinations as to exactly what should be happening next. At the same time, we have to be vigilant because every time a case like this with significant impact is decided, we have the Chamber of Business and Industry and the Manufacturers Association, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, which is really a workers' compensation insurance company disguised as a trade group, all start coming to the General Assembly to make certain demands, and those demands generally tend to be, what else can they do to restrict, eliminate, or severely curtail both eligibility for workers' compensation benefits on the part of victims of the workplace and benefits? And this time they're going to be saying to the General Assembly, gee whiz, we need legislative reform and intercession immediately. We didn't charge enough money for all of this exposure we're now going to have. And therefore, we need to dramatically increase workers' compensation premium rates unless you start taking away benefits from workers that they would otherwise be entitled to. So I'm looking that while we're working in the judicial arena, in the legislative branch, there's going to be some pressure and some demand that working people and their unions must actively resist and must actively focus on, because that's the next thing that's coming.
Something we most certainly have to keep up on top of. And if folks have any thoughts, any questions, they can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you've been involved in any of this, we can pass along to people who can help. Irwin, I appreciate the time. I know this is something we will continue with over the coming weeks and months because this is really important stuff.
Absolutely. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk about it. I hope our listeners really proactively engage in looking at these kinds of matters themselves and with their friends, co-workers, and neighbors and family members.
Good stuff. Irwin, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you.
Good to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
We're in a fight to bring the middle class back. And we ain't even planning on losing in this mighty war. The working class is under attack.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.